Welcome to episode 134 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for August 19th, 2009. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, bike theft in London sees a huge spike. Four product recalls, lots of Lance Armstrong news, professional cycling news and results, and a man is arrested while riding with an alligator on his shoulders. Following the news, we'll look at two sides of the cyclist versus motorist debate, and then an interview with Jeff Helfand, the creator of VeloReviews.com. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Fredcast. Great to have you with us. Hope you enjoyed the video version of the Fredcast that I presented to you last week. That was our Land Rover or Beya team training ride in advance of the Tour of Utah, and we did that ride to benefit the National MS Society. So I hope you enjoyed that video. Thanks to the National MS Society, Contender Bicycles here in Salt Lake City, and also, of course, Team Land Rover or Beya for donating their time to such a wonderful event. And thanks to everyone who came out and participated. We had a great time. I'm looking forward to doing something like that again in the near future. Hey, this episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Audible.com. We'll have more info on that. But in the meantime, go ahead and check out audiblepodcast.com/cycling. And this episode of the Fredcast also brought to you by your donations. Go to www.thefredcast.com. Click on that donation link at the top of the page to do a one-time donation or to subscribe. Every little bit counts. We thank you and we thank Audible for the support of the Fredcast. Well, let's get right into the news for this week. Well, our first story comes to us from bikebiz.com in the UK. It appears that London has seen a dramatic jump in numbers of bikes stolen, resulting in what, you're not going to believe this, police in London claim is a 333% rise in arrests since the start of 2009. Now, in Westminster alone, there were 426 bicycle thefts between April and August of this year, and according to BikeBiz, that was a 71% jump. Now, in total, London has seen a 6% rise in bike thefts, with 18,218 reported bike thefts since last April. Chief Inspector Glenn Tunstall was quoted by the BBC as saying, quote, "We have increased our patrols and are doing more proactive work around thefts, but in a lot of these arrests, we're unable to trace the owners of these bikes, which makes it very difficult for us to achieve justice. So we're asking members of the public to register with firms like Immobilize.com, and there's a link in the show notes, and make a note of their frame numbers, and that will allow us to be more effective." Meanwhile, the City of London has started a new program to try to encourage novice bike commuters to become, well, experienced bike commuters. You may recall that earlier this year, there was a tube strike or a subway strike in London. And as a result, a group called the London Cycling Campaign led rides for novice riders. These rides began at tube stations and were intended specifically for inexperienced cyclists. It was a huge success, with more than 11,000 people taking part in that program. As a result now, the City of London has started what they call Cycle Fridays. The basic point of this, and this will continue every Friday from now through October 2nd, is that every rider will be able to join a convoy and will be greeted by so-called ride marshals, who will give their bikes a basic check and give them maps before they set out. According to Boris Johnson, mayor of London, quote, "Whether it's Monday, Wednesday, or Sunday, I tend to go by bike. But although it's safe and getting safer, I fully appreciate that some people find it a little daunting at first. Cycle Fridays are a brilliantly simple way of giving thousands of commuters the confidence to get cycling. I'm sure that when they see how much of a fun, healthy, and convenient experience it can be, they will be hooked. According to Coy Thompson, the chief executive of London Cycling Campaign, quote, "We know that a third of Londoners own a bike, and many want to cycle more. But force of habit, particularly with commuting, stops them switching to a faster, cheaper alternative. Cycle Fridays will help people break old habits and exercise their choice to cycle." I've put a link in the show notes to where you can find more information about Cycle Fridays. I hope that this is as much of a success as it could be in London, and if so, that much like the Bike Hire campaign that really caught fire in Paris and is spread all throughout the world, hopefully Cycle Fridays will catch on in other major metropolitan areas around the world, and hence we'll see more bicycle commuters. Well, if there's one thing that keeps people off their bikes for commuting, it's, well, fear, and the fear of injury and safety. And unfortunately, I've got four product recalls to tell you about. The great thing is that it seems like these things get caught a lot quicker these days, therefore making cycling a much safer sport. The first is child trailers from Burley Design. The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission, in cooperation with Burley, is recalling about 2,700 model year 2009 D-Lite ST and Solo ST child carriers. Now, these are the trailers that you pull behind your bike. They attach to the rear of your bike, and you tend to pull your kids in these trailers. About 2,700 of them being recalled. And the problem here is that the hub axles assembly's internal sleeve can loosen, causing one wheel to separate from the trailer, hence posing a risk of injury to the child or to the cyclists themselves. Now, thankfully, so far, no incidents or injuries have been reported. The way that you check to see whether or not you have one of these trailers is that they are designed to carry one or two kids behind a bike. And these are only model year 2009 D-Lite ST and 2009 Solo ST trailers with serial numbers that begin with D as in David 939 or D as in David 948. And you'll find the serial number located in the rear cargo area behind the seat on the lower left frame tube. And the trailers also have D-Lite ST or Solo ST screen printed on the cover. If you've got one of these trailers, as with any of these recalls, stop using the product immediately. Contact the manufacturer for a free repair kit or replacement, depending on the different terms of the recalls. And for each of these recalls we'll be talking about tonight, I've got links in the show notes to the manufacturer's website as well as to the Consumer Product Safety Commission's websites. And each of those links will take you directly to the information about each of these recalls. Next up is a recall from SRAM. SRAM is working with the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission on a voluntary recall on its 10-speed power lock chain connectors. SRAM has determined that there is a potential for the power lock connector link outer plate to fail, and as you can imagine, this might cause the chain to break and could pose a fall hazard to the rider. Now, this is important. These are the power lock chain connectors on 10-speed chains. What are not included and not affected are 8-speed chains, 9-speed chains, and 10-speed chains without the power lock connector. This is sort of a very detailed and specific recall. Please go to the website at www.thefredcast.com, click on the show notes for show 134, and click on the link that says informational PDF from SRAM, and that'll take you to the Bicycle Retailer and Industry News website, where you'll be able to download the information on this particular recall. Next is a recall from Felt Bicycles, and this is for 2007 and 2008 model year Felt F1X cyclocross bikes. About 1,500 of these were sold, and the problem here is that the fork steerer tube on the bike's front fork can break, causing a rider to lose control and fall, and of course, posing a risk of injuries. Felt has received 6 reports of bike forks breaking, including 2 reports of minor cuts and scrapes. Again, these are 2007 and 2008 Felt F1X cyclocross bikes. They're in semi-matte black and have aluminum frames with carbon fiber forks with aluminum steerer tubes. These were sold in bike stores nationwide from July 2006 through April 2009 for between $1,400 and $1,500. Again, go to the show notes for more information. Stop using the bike immediately and contact Felt to receive a free inspection and free repair. Finally, is a recall from Nerve Sports of Huntington Beach, California, working with the Consumer Product Safety Commission. They are recalling their Cannibal bikes, and these are sort of beach cruiser slash chopper slash lowrider style bikes. And they only sold about 120 of these bikes. They were sold nationwide through Nerve Sports authorized dealers from December 2008 through April 2009 for about $600. The problem here is that the stem that holds the handlebar onto the bike can crack and cause the rider to lose control, posing a serious risk of injury to the rider. And Nerve has received two reports of cracked stems, and in both cases, the cracks occurred during assembly of the bike, and thankfully, no injuries have been reported. Now, to identify your bike, again, this would be a Nerve Cannibal Chopper bike with graphic designs by Corey Miller. The bikes have a black matte finish, and they have serial numbers ranging from L8E0300001 through L8E1001050, and the serial numbers are located on the bottom of the bike between the pedals. Again, I've got links in the show notes in case you didn't catch those serial numbers. Go ahead and check that out. If you've got one of these bikes, stop using it immediately. Contact the manufacturer to find out how you can get your bike repaired. Well, for those of you who have been Fredcast listeners for any length of time, you'll recall that a few years ago, I used to do a segment on every show, and I would introduce it with a trumpet fanfare. Well, it looks like with Lance Armstrong's return to professional cycling in so many different ways, it looks like it's time once again to bring back ladies and gentlemen, it's time once again for that segment of the Fredcast that we like to call the Lance Armstrong News of the Week. Lots of Lance Armstrong news for you this week, starting with Lance Armstrong winning another championship to add to his collection. I know basketball players and baseball players and lots of others have trophy rooms. I'm sure that Lance has a jersey room, and it must be a very large one. Now, you know, Lance recently bought a house in Aspen, Colorado, and last week he participated in the Blast the Mass Mountain Bike Cross Country Championship, winning that race and becoming the Colorado State Pro Men's Cross Country Champion. Finishing second in that race was Jay Henry and third, Len Zani. Lance Armstrong told the Aspen Times, quote, "Not bad for a Texan. I expected to make some big mistake, like go over the handlebars or do something careless. Everything flowed well, but I still kept looking back. I always do." Just a few short days later, Lance participated in the Leadville Trail 100. This is a 100-mile off-road mountain bike race. And you'll recall that last year, Dave Weens, the defending champion, fended Lance off, winning in 2008. Not so lucky in 2009 as Lance Armstrong left the entire field just 35 miles into this year's Leadville 100 and walked away with the victory, breaking the course record by 17 minutes, winning the race in 6 hours, 28 minutes, and 50 seconds. Dave Weens did come in second place in 6:57.01 after having won 6 times in the Leadville Trail 100. After the race, Dave Weens said, quote, "He's Lance Armstrong, and he's just off the tour. Last year, he was just off the couch. That made it a pretty fair fight for he and I. This year, I rode fantastic today. I'm happy. He killed it. He got away and time trialed it for 65 miles. And time trial it he did. In fact, in the last few miles, Lance was riding with a flat rear tire. Not bad, as Lance said, for some Texan." Meanwhile, while Lance was in Colorado, there are lots of rumors saying that he met with the governor of Colorado, Governor Bill Ritter, to discuss possibly bringing a stage race back to Colorado, a la the Coors Classic of so many years ago. I think a lot of Coloradans would be happy to see a stage race return to that state. Colorado, well known not only for its mountain biking, but also for its road biking as well. And a lot of people would like to see a stage race come back. For those of us in Utah, however, especially with the tour of Utah going on right now, I wonder if a stage race came back to Colorado, what that might do to a race like the Tour of Utah. And plus, knowing the financial problems that races like the Tour of Utah, the Tour of Georgia, and the Tour of Missouri have had in years past, bringing a stage race to Colorado, what effect would that have on some of the other major stage races here in the United States? It's interesting both on both sides to see whether or not this is going to happen. I love to see it on the one hand because I think Colorado is a great venue for a stage race. But on the other hand, if it's going to bring down some of the existing races right now that in some cases have been struggling, well, that might not be such a great thing. Time will tell. We'll see what happens. And speaking of the Tour of Missouri, while Team Astana will indeed be racing as the Tour of Missouri begins September 7th in St. Louis and concluding September 13th in Kansas City, while Team Astana will be racing as a part of this year's Tour of Missouri, Lance Armstrong has announced that he will not be participating in the Tour of Missouri as he has already committed to a previously scheduled fundraiser for the Live Strong Foundation in Canada during the same time. And finally, while Lance Armstrong was in Scotland recently, he sent out a tweet that said, "Hey Glasgow, I'm coming your way. Who wants to go for a bike ride?" More than 200 showed up in the pouring rain as he turned up in the Paisley district of Glasgow, and they all went for a ride with Lance. According to Lance, quote, "It's a chance to meet lots of people. We made up our mind to come and see a show two nights ago, a show with you too. And I said, hey, let's have a bike ride." Who showed up with Lance? None other than former world champion Graham Obrey. Graham saying, quote, "It's fantastic. I know my friends will be jealous. He does have such a draw." Among those riding was 44-year-old nurse Julie Watson, who's been cycling for 10 years, and she said, quote, "It's a bit out of this world. It's quite dreamlike. It's a chance in a lifetime to ride with my hero. He's an inspiration that I've followed for years since his cancer." And at the end of the ride, Lance tweeted once again, "Thanks to everyone who turned up to ride in Paisley. I figured we'd have a nice ride for a dozen or so, but hundreds came." He then said, "Ha ha, awesome." How cool would that be to just read a tweet for Lance? He's in your town and you get the opportunity to ride with him. Great going for those in Glasgow. Well, moving on from our Lance Armstrong news of the week, let's look at a little bit of pro cycling news, starting with the aforementioned Tour of Utah, which is here in the state of Utah, August 18th through the 23rd. Today is the 19th. We've completed a prologue and stage one of this year's race. My title for the prologue, BMC Shined and Zabriskie Fined. Now, the prologue for this year's race was a short course, just less than 3 miles. It took place up on Capitol Hill near the state capitol with an uphill start, then heading downhill on a rolling course, a final uphill, and then a tough chicane, a little S-turn just before the finish where a couple of crashes occurred. And the racers did not disappoint. We had racers like Floyd Landis, Dave Zabriskie, Ben Jacquemain, and of course, the race defending champion Jeff Lauder from Team BMC. And as I said, BMC did shine with Brent Bookwalter winning the prologue in 6 minutes and 12 seconds from Team BMC. Second place went to U.S. national time trial champion riding solo without any of his Garmin Slipstream teammates, Dave Zabriskie, Utah's own Dave Zabriskie, coming in 2 seconds back in 6 minutes and 14 seconds. Same time, Ian McKissick from BMC took third, Ben Jacquemain from Bissell in fourth, and Jeff Lauder, the defending champion, in fifth. Why did BMC shine? Because BMC took first, third, fifth, and sixth in this prologue time trial. Very, very impressive. Meanwhile, however, Dave Zabriskie was fined $500 for what was termed a uniform violation. Now, Dave took off out of the start house in his red, white, and blue Garmin Slipstream National Champion skin suit with a cool helmet that made him look like Captain America, and I know that Dave likes his Marvel comics, so that makes a lot of sense. However, when Dave showed up on the podium, he was no longer in his Garmin Slipstream outfit. Instead, he was wearing his D's Nuts kit, and for that, he was fined $500 by race organizers. Now, today was stage one of the Tour of Utah. It took off out of Ogden, climbed up toward Snow Basin, back down into Morgan, Utah, through some rolling, beautiful rural terrain, one of the places I actually love to ride myself frequently. It's a great training ride, and these guys tore up the course as they headed up toward the East Canyon Reservoir, up Big Mountain, which is a monster of a climb. That was the KOM for the one of the KOMs for the day, and then what they called a short bump, which those of us around here called Emigration Canyon, then a descent into the Research Park at the University of Utah, where it was Rock Racing's Francisco Mancebo and Oscar Sevilla going 1-2 to win the stage. Third place going to Kelly Benefit Strategies, David Velu. Fourth place going to Victor Hugo Pena from Rock Racing. And fifth, David Klinger from Cole Sport. At the end of the day, in the GC, leading was Francisco Mancebo from Rock Racing, Oscar Sevilla in second, Brent Bookwalter from BMC in third, Dave Zabriskie from Garmin Slipstream in fourth, Ben Jacquemains in fifth, Jeff Lowder, our defending champion from the BMC Pro Cycling Team in sixth, David Velu from Kelly Benefit Strategies in seventh, Sam Bewley in eighth from the Trek Livestrong Under 23 Development Squad, Chris Baldwin from the Ouch Pro Cycling Team, that's Floyd Landis's teammate, in ninth place, and in 10th, also from Ouch, is Bradley White. We've got a lot of racing to come, and as a matter of fact, to give you a little bit of a preview of what that racing is going to be like, I had the opportunity to be on the Locked On Sports show today on KFAN AM 1320 here in Salt Lake City. I happen to know the host, David Locke, of that show, and he was gracious enough to have me on to answer some questions for those in his audience who may be cycling neophytes. Here are just a few excerpts of that show so you can get a taste of what the locals here in Salt Lake heard about. A lot of what we talked about was sort of local, about where a good place is to watch, so I cut that out. So just a little bit of me talking to David Locke from the Locked On Sports show here on KFAN, KFAN 1320 in Salt Lake City.
David, thanks so much for taking the time. I just want to get your perspective on the Tour to Utah. I mean, I think I'm not sure all of us get it. I'm not sure all of us really know, what this is, what the level of competition is, etc. Give us a little breakdown on kind of on how high a level this is and what this event is like.
Absolutely, and glad to be here, David. Thanks for having me on. You know, this really is what it's billed as, which is the toughest stage race in the United States. For your listeners who maybe don't understand what stage racing is, simply that means it's a multi-day event. Every day there's a race, but sometimes those races can be different. So yesterday we saw a prologue, which really is just sort of like an appetizer. It was a couple of miles, and it was one man against the clock. And it was a short course, and when they finished, the guy who had the fastest time won the stage. Today was a longer stage going from Ogden to Salt Lake, up over Big Mountain, past East Canyon. It was a tough stage. Friday, as a matter of fact, there's going to be another time trial, and which was just like yesterday, back at Miller Motorsports Park, right where you are right now. The big day is Saturday. It's called the Queen Stage. In stage racing, that means it's the longest, the toughest, the most climbing. On Saturday, they're going to be racing from Park City out to Camas, through Midway, up to Sundance, up and over the Alpine Loop, through Draper, and all the way up to Snowbird, almost 11,000 feet of climbing on a bicycle. This is really a tough race, big competition.
Toughest days of the Tour de France, does that equal it? Are the Tour days that much more difficult, or is this right up there with as difficult a day as you get in stage racing?
You know what? Yeah. I mean, if you look at, for instance, today, with the amount of climbing and the amount of miles that they did today, if you look at Saturday and the amount of climbing and the miles that they're doing there, absolutely, this ranks up there with probably the toughest stage this year, the Mont Ventoux stage, which was the second to last stage of the Tour de France this year, ranks up there with the Alpe d'Huez, which is always very, very tough in the Tour de France. And as a matter of fact, people say that climb up to Snowbird is comparable to the Alpe d'Huez, which is in France, and it's one of sort of the storied climbs in cycling. Last year, I had the opportunity to ride in a team car with the team Land Rover Orbea here on that Queen stage from Park City to Snowbird. And that's a team where all of the racers are under 24 years old. It's a development team. These are guys who are training to be top pros. These guys were hurting going up the climbs. And even a guy like Fast Freddy Rodriguez from the Rock Racing team last year, I was watching him going up that Snowbird climb. He was in pain.
So that's just a little taste of what the listeners to KFAN 1320 and the Locked On Sports Show heard today. Went on with a lot more local information after that, talking about just sort of giving them some perspective on the speed that these guys go up some of these roads that people around here know pretty well, and also talking about some good vantage points from which to watch the race. Again, my thanks to David Locke and the Locked On Sports team for having me on the show. It was a lot of fun, and I hope that they'll have me on again real soon. And you know what? For me, it wasn't so much being on there and getting exposure for the show or for myself. It really wasn't about that. For me, what I loved was here was a sports talk program that was taking literally 10 minutes out of its day to stop talking about Brett Favre, to stop talking about the local college football teams or even our local minor league baseball team or, of course, the Utah Jazz. Stop talking about so-called conventional sports, giving cycling an opportunity to be in the spotlight. And frankly, we don't see that a lot on a lot of sports talk radio. So I'm really glad that we had the time to do that today. And really, the Tour of Utah, at least here, is giving that opportunity for cycling to be in the spotlight once again. And that's great. Anytime we can make that happen, anytime we can show cycling in a positive light, it's a great thing for all of us. So the Tour of Utah does continue through this Sunday. I'll bring more reports to you later this week from the Tour of Utah. I'm going to be out at a couple more stages, and I'll bring reports to you as I can. One other report I want to give to you is just a report on our charity events that we talked about on our last couple of shows. The fact that Team Land Rover Orbea was gracious enough to once again contribute their time and their energy to the show, and also to help us with a charity that's near and dear to my heart, and that's the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. As we told you last week, they allowed us to come out on a training ride with them last Wednesday. We did two rides. We did a flat ride, and we also did the Emigration Canyon climb. We split the group up, and whoever wanted to go do the climb, we went and we did that, and the others did sort of a flat ride. And then we all met back at a park here in Salt Lake City for everybody to have some dinner together. It was a great event, a lot of fun. We had about 30-some-odd people show up. The really cool thing was we started at Contender Bikes here in Salt Lake. That's where Dave Zabriskie goes for his bike tune-ups, and as we were getting to roll out, Dave rolled up into the parking lot, and a lot of people got a kick out of that, so that was kind of cool. We also auctioned off a seat in their car for any stage of the Tour of Utah, and the Queen stage I just talked about there on KFAN was the one that our winning bidder chose. Thank you to everybody for being involved in the auction, for being involved in the ride. We're hoping to do this again soon. And thanks again to the National MS Society, Contender Bikes, and of course to Team Land Rover Orbea for all of them volunteering their time to make this a success. Moving on in our professional cycling coverage, it has been announced that Tour de France champion Alberto Contador will stay with his team Astana in 2010. Now, as you know, Lance Armstrong is going to be leaving Astana and going to his new team Radio Shack for 2010. And by the way, it's also been rumored that Levi Leipheimer will be going over to Team Radio Shack as well. However, according to a team statement for Team Astana, quote, the Astana cycling team management reconfirms that Alberto Contador is expected to ride for Team Astana in 2010. Prior to the 2008 season, Contador signed a three-year contract with Team Astana, ensuring that the rider will represent the Kazakh-sponsored team for the years 2008, 2009, and 2010. Now, you also will recall that Astana went through some significant financial trouble this year after some of their sponsors defaulted on some payments and leaving riders without getting payroll checks. Team statement went on to say, quote, our sponsors are keen to continue with the team at least until the end of 2013, and it is clear that Alberto Contador will be our absolute leader of the team for next season. Very interesting that they used the term absolute leader when you consider the battles that were going on in Team Astana during this year's Tour de France between Lance Armstrong, Alberto Contador, and I think to a lesser extent, Levi Leipheimer. So Contador sticks with Astana for 2010 as Leipheimer and Armstrong take their leave of the team. And finally tonight, police in Boutte, Louisiana were suspicious when they spotted a man riding his bike with a 3-foot, get this, alligator wrapped around his shoulder. The cyclist was Taron Ingram, and he was arrested on multiple charges while the alligator was released into a nearby marsh. Not surprisingly, Ingram was also charged with, wait for it, possession of drug paraphernalia. There have been many news stories of cyclists and alligators apparently over the years, including Philip Barrett, who had a run-in with an alligator in 1977. 15-year-old Philip was out riding his bike when an alligator ran out from the bushes, and his bike collided with the alligator, and he crashed over the alligator. Philip ran away from the alligator, and not once did Philip ever consider putting the alligator on his shoulders or taking the alligator for a bike ride. Of course, Philip wasn't under the influence of drugs, and perhaps then he could think clearly. Maybe Mr. Ingram, the guy in this case who was carrying the 3-foot alligator wrapped around his shoulder, maybe he should have considered perhaps one of those trailers that we talked about earlier in the show. And with that, that will end the news for this episode of the Fredcast. Now, before we get into the features for this week's show, I want to thank this week's sponsor, Audible. Go to audiblepodcast.com/cycling and sign up for your free 2-week trial of the Audible Listener Gold Program, and that's going to also get you a free Audible book for you to put on your iPod or your Zune or your iPhone or one of almost 500 different devices, including perhaps that GPS that you've got on your windshield right this very second. Now, Audible has over 60,000 titles, and since we are in the middle of summer, and since we just talked about alligators, I thought that I might have a summary sort of summer reading kind of recommendation for you, and this week's recommendation is Tourist Season by Carl Hiaasen. Carl Hiaasen, one of my favorite authors, and Tourist Season is about sort of a terroristic group, if you will, in South Florida that can't wait to get the tourists and the theme parks and the trailers out of South Florida and put it back into a more natural state. It is a sort of an environmental themed book. It's also a sort of an anti-growth book, but also, and perhaps most importantly, it's a detective slash media novel. And it's got a lot of humor, and it's just, don't let any of those messages scare you off. It's just a lot of fun to read. It's Tourist Season by Carl Hiaasen, one of over 60,000 different titles available to you on Audible. And if you go to audiblepodcast.com/cycling, you will help out the Fredcast, and you will also be getting that 2-week free trial. We thank Audible for their support of the Fredcast, and we thank you for your support of Audible. Now, in the first section of the features tonight, I want to talk to you about an issue which is boiling over all over the country, indeed, all over the world. And what it is this battle, this constant battle going on between cyclists and motorists. Let's look at it from the motorist perspective for a moment. They look at us as people who run stop signs, who take up multiple lanes of traffic unnecessarily, who run stoplights, who fail to signal our intentions when we're on our bikes, and as people who have no right to be on the road, who have no right to be outside of a bike lane, who, if there is a bike path that exists or a multi-use path that exists, we should be there and as a result not be on the road. In short, they don't think we have any rights. Looking at it from our perspective, a lot of times we look at drivers as people who pass too closely, who open their doors when we are coming by and thereby causing us injury. We look at motorists as people who don't understand that we can't often ride on bike paths and multi-use paths because if we're out training, we're going way too fast and we're way too much of a danger to the pedestrians and dogs and kids that are on those paths. We see motorists who, despite laws, don't understand that we have rights that allow us to leave the bike lanes, to take over entire lanes if need be. We also see motorists as people who use us for target practice, whether that's from BB guns or airsoft guns, or worse, people who throw bottles and cans and spit and invectives at us whenever they feel like it, simply because we're on two wheels, because if we're on two wheels, we're assumed not to be paying taxes, to therefore not have a right to the road. So there's this contention that's going on, and I want to explore that through two recent things that happened, one from the motorist perspective and one from the cyclist's perspective. First of all, let's look at it from the motorist's perspective. Now, there's this pair of Detroit radio DJs. Some have called them shock jocks. I don't know them. I can't hang that label on them. The team is called Dominski and Doyle. They're a radio morning team, and they recently aired a segment in which they unleashed their venom on cyclists. But listen carefully. There's a lot for us to criticize here about what the DJs had to say. But if you listen carefully, you will also find that there is a lot of truth in some of the things that they say about the cyclists. Listen carefully. I'll come back in a moment.
All right, here's something I got a problem with. You ever driving along in Michigan roads, and of course you have to share the road with people on bicycles. And people on bicycles, they often take themselves a little too seriously. Now, what I'm about to say, these are general statements. I don't mean to disparage all bicyclists. I'm sure there are three out there who are normal, but the rest of you are nuts. Well, I guess because of the gas prices, more and more people are hitting the roads on bicycles, and as a result, more and more states are passing laws to keep bicyclists safe. Now, this was in USA Today this week. Check this out. As more riders take to the roads on bicycles, more states giving them a bigger chunk of pavement, 3 feet to be precise, so they won't get swiped by cars. Now, this has nothing to do with Michigan, but check it out. In Colorado, a law recently signed by the Democratic governor there not only requires motorists to give riders at least a 3-foot-wide berth, you can't always do that. You can't always do that. Not here, I'm saying.
Right. I mean, I think they painted lanes for them in Colorado. But here, if you gave them 3 feet where they're riding, you'd be in the other lane.
Right. It's not practical. Not here. Well, not only are they being given that, in Colorado, it is now illegal to throw things from your car at a bicyclist.
Apparently, up until this point, it was only illegal if you actually hit them.
Right. You could. If you didn't have a good arm, if you didn't have good hand-eye coordination, you could get away with it.
No harm, no foul.
Right, but if you hit him, then it was illegal. Well, now even the attempt to hit a bicycle. But what does this tell you? This tells you how many of us drivers get disgusted with how selfishly bicyclists take to the roads. And they do. I'm sorry, they do. They're jerks.
Many of them are. If they would follow the rules of the road like the rest of us have to, a lot of these problems could be avoided.
Right.
If they would stop at the red lights and not just check and then blow through the intersection like they often do. I mean, they want to claim their legal right to be on the road. Well, then obey the same laws that we have.
Honest to God, how many people have seen a bicyclist and you would just love to lob something at their heads? Because, no, seriously, I'm not condoning it. I'm not saying that we do it, but I'm just saying, hasn't the thought gone through your head? Because seriously, how selfishly do some of these people ride their bikes? They want to be on the roads. They always want to say how, well, you know, we've got the same right to be there as a car, same rules apply, blah, 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 blah. But that only covers them for being there. It does not cover them for actually obeying the same laws. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the guy in the bike is going to blow through the stop sign. He's going to blow through the red light. He's going to he's going to violate every damn traffic law out there. But God forbid we try to get by him. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden, what do? How many times have you guys been on a road, let's say a 35-mile-an-hour road, and the guy in the bike is doing like, about 19, but they won't get over?
And it's usually a big pack.
But Bill, I know that it often is, but I've even seen it where it's just like two guys on two bikes and they could clearly get over and they won't. And it's just flat out arrogance. They will ride as if they're a car right in the dead center of the lane just to be a pain in the ass. Mm-hmm. I have seen this time and time and time again. And oh God, you just want to go Grand Theft Auto on them when you see that. You really do. Of course you can't. And then the worst types, you know, they've got the attitude when they've got the stupid, they've got the racing pants on. They've got the racing shirt on. It's spandex everywhere. It's like, look, genius, you're not in a competition, okay? Fine, you're in good shape. We get it. All right? You don't have to show yourself off with your stupid racing stripes and your goddamn helmet. We get it. You're in better shape than me. Fine. I get it. I'd be in better shape if I rode a bike, too. I understand, okay? You win. Now just move over. That's all I'm saying.
Now, there is more to this invective, and you can listen to it. I put a link in the show notes to where you can listen to the entire thing. Couple of things come to mind. Number one, look, we've all seen the cyclists who do indeed break the traffic laws, who run the stop signs, who run the lights, who are riding five or six or more abreast unnecessarily. And you know what? It's those guys and gals, it's those people who give the rest of us a bad name. And it's those folks who engender this kind of hate against cyclists. Now, of course, what these guys are talking about with wanting to throw things at people or run them off the road or all those other awful things that they said, while they say, well, you know, you can't do that. I mean, give me a break, folks. They really are inciting their audience in a lot of ways. As a matter of fact, they had several callers later on in the show who called in and were so upset at cyclists. And when you listen to the hate that they have in their voice and obviously in their hearts towards cyclists, it's irrational. Now, look, I've seen some blog posts on this issue who say, hey, you know, yeah, there are a few people who break the rules, but not many. I'm sorry, I have to disagree with you. I really don't think we're talking about 1 or 2 or 10% of cyclists who run stop signs and run stoplights and do things that make motorists upset. Look, I'm a cyclist, but I'm also a driver. And I'm telling you that I run across cyclists time after time after time, day after day, who do things that I can understand make other drivers upset. Great example. I'm driving the other night. There's a guy riding his bike without a helmet. It's a fixie. He's riding on the sidewalk. It's dark. And he literally came off the sidewalk between two parked cars out in front of me in my lane without any warning. It was dark. I was lucky that I saw him. And it was entirely possible that he could have been hit and killed if it had been in any other situation. So look, let's not say that there are not a large number of cyclists out there that do this. Is it the majority? I hope not. But let's not kid ourselves. It's more than a tiny minority that do it. Having said that, this hate, calling us idiots, essentially saying that it's okay to lob something at people's heads or, to use their words, quote, go Grand Theft Auto on them. That's inexcusable. And I'm hoping that cyclists in Detroit will call into WCSX and talk about Dominski and Doyle and get them the attention they deserve for these negative comments. It is out of line. It's wrong. But at the same time, so is some of the behavior of our fellow cyclists. I talk time and time again on the show about being good cycling citizens, not just to present a good example to the motorists and the pedestrians out there of the world who never get on a bike and really don't understand what it's like for us out there, but also to be a good example for our fellow cyclists. It's only by doing the right thing that we're going to be able to get the motorists to see us in the right light. Now, on the other side of the coin, a listener sent me a link to an article in the Orlando Sentinel that came out today. And this is, again, one side of the story. I'm curious to hear the other side of the story, but it presents the other side of this same motorist versus cyclist issue. A 69-year-old Delray Beach man found out the perils of not doing enough for bicyclists to think he was sharing the road with them. A group of angry cyclists confronted him last week, accusing him of passing them too closely on State Road A1A in Boca Raton. According to the Boca Raton police, one cyclist reached into the car, grabbed Miles Barish, and threatened to beat him, while other cyclists punched and kicked his 2008 Lexus convertible. The cyclist, Thomas McDonald, age 50, of Lighthouse Point, was arrested and charged with simple assault and battery on a person older than 65. He also was charged with burglary. McDonald could not be reached to comment despite attempts by phone. "I didn't even know it was coming," Barris said of the cyclist's reaction. He was heading to dinner on A1A with his convertible top down August 13th when he came upon a group of cyclists riding in front of him. "They were taking up the entire lane," he said. He tapped his horn a couple of times to let them know he was passing, Barris said. He said he went into the opposite lane, passed the group, and then stopped for the traffic light at Palmetto Park Road. That's when he felt someone grab his neck from behind. Quote, "He said I came too close to him and I could have injured him. I didn't clip anybody. They surrounded my car. They walked on the hood of my car. They kicked in the doors." Some witnesses, according to police reports, said Barris hit one of the bicycles as he was passing the group of cyclists. If that's true, then Barris was absolutely in the wrong. Did that justify vigilante justice on the part of the cyclists? You tell me. Continuing, Bob Sabin, president of the Boca Raton Bicycle Club, said drivers often pass cyclists too closely. Parenthetically, that's true. It happens all over the country, and it scares the you-know-what out of me every time. I was on a ride in L.A. last weekend, and a guy came within about 2 inches of me, and I saw my life flash before my eyes. Continuing, the quote from Bob Sabin, the president of the Boca Raton Bicycle Club, sometimes clipping them with their side view mirrors without the driver realizing it. Quote, "People usually don't do it intentionally," said Sabin, who doesn't know McDonald or the group he rides with. "They come a lot closer a lot of the time. When that happens, or when a car suddenly cuts off a cyclist, quote, you feel like someone is trying to kill you. I know I've gotten hot under the collar when that happens. But attacking motorists isn't the answer," he added. Amen. And the bicyclist might not have been following the rules of the road. Barris told police about 30 cyclists were taking an entire lane. According to state law in Florida, it's illegal for cyclists to obstruct traffic by riding more than two abreast. West Palm Beach cyclist Rafael Clemente said he used to participate in the twice-weekly group ride involved in the August 13th dispute, but he stopped because of the hostility between cyclists and motorists resulting from the cyclists'— these are his words, rude behavior, he said. Quote, "It increases the level of friction when cyclists act like that." Barris said his car has about $4,000 damage with dents and scratches on parts of it, including the hood and trunk. Even a speaker was torn out, he said. Now, this is where the story gets even weirder. He said he isn't angry about the incident and thinks the cyclists were lucky. This is the weird part. Barris, who has a permit to carry a concealed weapon, was carrying a gun that day. Quote, "In another minute or so, I was going to take out my gun and take a couple of them out," he said. "I don't think the whole road belongs to them." Now, in the United States of America, we have the right to own firearms. In many states, citizens are given the right to carry weapons concealed. So you can carry a firearm on your person, and if you are in imminent danger of death, you have the right to shoot to defend yourself. With the number of cyclists involved allegedly in this incident, with Mr. Barish feeling like he was his life was in imminent danger. Not only did these cyclists do the wrong thing by their vigilante justice, but they also could have lost their lives. And by the way, the listener who sent this to me, it was that line. In another minute or so, I was going to take out my gun and take a couple of them out. It was that line that he quoted when he sent this article to me. But it, to my way of thinking, the problem here wasn't so much that the guy was carrying a gun and he was going to shoot somebody because he thought he himself was about to be killed. It was the fact that he himself thought that he was going to be killed. Now, I'm withholding my judgment on this story because I know that there's got to be another side of the story. It is entirely possible that he may have clipped one of these cyclists, in which case he himself should be charged. Should he have been beaten by the cyclists? No. We talked about this on The Spokesman several episodes ago, and we talked about how we've all been guilty of getting hot under the collar. But if we pulled the driver out of his car, have we walked on his hood? Have we beat up his car? Have we beat him up? No. Should that happen? No. We've got to do something, folks, about this contention between motorists and cyclists. Everybody, let me say that again, everybody in each of these situations was wrong. Okay, the shock jocks, if that's what they are, let's call them DJs, the morning guys, they were wrong in their comments. The cyclists who ride and run red lights and run stop signs and jump off curbs between parked cars into oncoming traffic, they're wrong. The cyclists who are riding five or six abreast in a group of 30 and taking up an entire lane, they are wrong. The driver who clips a cyclist or gets too close to a cyclist or throws something at a cyclist or spits on them or shoots at them or hits them, or they are wrong. The guys involved in vigilante justice, they are wrong. I've said it time and time again. When I go through the news getting ready to do the Fredcast every week, I see stories like this, and I mean, it's mind-numbing. There are so many of them. Folks, this has to change. Change begins with us. Let's be good cycling citizens. When we're drivers, let's be good examples for other drivers and give those cyclists the 3 feet they deserve, whether or not they're in the bike lane, whether or not your state has a 3-foot law. If we can all be good examples, whether in a car or on a bike, all of this heat will cool off. All of this anger will simmer down. And in those famous words, we will all finally get along. Whew, okay, let's get on to something a little bit lighter, and it's something that I think you're all really going to enjoy. I had the opportunity last week to sit down and do a telephone interview with Jeff Helfand. Jeff Helfand is the creator of a new website called VeloReviews.com. He had the opportunity to explain to me about Velo Reviews and what it is, and we talked about a lot of different subjects about what Velo Reviews will do. There's a lot of social networking sites out there for cyclists, but I think Velo Reviews is taking a slightly different tack. So here's my interview with Jeff Helfand from Velo Reviews. I hope you enjoy it. Joining me today on the Fredcast is Jeff Helfand. Jeff recently created a new website. It's a little bit of social media, a little bit of product reviews, some events and photos mixed in for good measure. Jeff, welcome to the Fredcast.
Hi, David. Thank you. It's an honor to be on the Fredcast.
I don't know about an honor, but it's great to have you here. Jeff, let's talk a little bit about your website. It's VeloReviews.com. If you can, give me the elevator pitch. Explain to me what VeloReviews.com is.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a number of the components that you mentioned as we entered into this conversation, where we are combining elements of social media around cycling and product reviews and mashing them all together in an environment for cycling enthusiasts and manufacturers to get together and have open conversations about the products and how to utilize the products and where to go have fun with your bike and get-togethers and everything that you would that you would look for in a social site, but with also a lot of nuts and bolts information on enjoying the sport.
Well, let's try to separate those things out a little bit, and let's focus first on the social networking aspect. There's sort of an explosion of social networking sites on the internet, you know, starting sort of at the high level with MySpace and Facebook and Twitter, and then coming down to very specific sites for certain vertical markets, whether it's cycling or mountain climbing or what have you. What makes VeloReviews a social networking site that cyclists are going to want to go to?
Well, I built the site for myself. So giving my background, I've actually been involved in this for quite some time. I was an executive with MTBR, if your mountain biking fans are familiar, and Road Bike Review. Sure. And so we had this nice generation, first generation of sites where you had all these folks coming together and having dialogues, but a lot of the times the conversations were anonymous. And it created an environment sometimes, especially for newbies, people who are new to the sport, that was very intimidating, and conversations that sometimes turned nasty, and you never understood what people's motivations were. And I wanted to solve that. And so VeloReviews, I think, is a very interesting social media site. It does combine some of the elements of the larger sites that you're talking about. But like a MySpace, you know, that's really music and teens. And Facebook is kind of getting together with your college friends and your high school buddies. And those circles don't necessarily intersect. I mean, we all have probably hundreds of friends, but they're not all cyclists. And so first, VeloReviews would obviously pare down the focus to cycling. And it's all aspects of cycling, you know, mountain biking, whether you're a free rider, downhiller, you know, if you're a roadie, if you're a track cyclist, if you're an adventure cyclist and you're riding cross country, it's all one environment because we all love everything about two wheels. And so not only are we uniting enthusiasts of all types of cycling, but it's a very transparent conversation. And this is the problem that I wanted to solve. So when you go to VeloReviews, first thing you'll notice is that in order to converse on the site, you actually do need to register, and you'll see member profiles on the site. We rolled out about 5 weeks ago into the public, and we're really happy with the number of people who have actually registered to start utilizing the site and conversing with each other. But one thing that you'll notice that's really unique is we actually have a good number of manufacturers who have already established memberships on VeloReviews. And this is really what I think the sweet spot is, and what I think your listeners and all our fellow enthusiasts will love about the site. It's being able to have these candid conversations with these manufacturers, again, in a very credible and transparent manner, so you know who you're speaking with and potentially what their biases might be. And so by eliminating kind of that mask that people have hidden behind in previous cycling websites, I think we have a much more interesting, engaging, and truthful conversation that takes place on VeloReviews.
So that makes sense. That's the social media site, and certainly makes it a lot less intimidating because we're getting rid of that sort of anonymous flamer, if you will. I think we've all seen, whether it's on cycling sites or any site. But what about the review portion? Because after all, it is called VeloReviews. Tell me about that, because in my looking at the site, I mean, the number of reviews that are available there, it's staggering.
Yes, it is kind of puzzling to see a brand new site with that much content, if you will. So the bottom line is the site is in partnership with my employer, a company called Power Reviews, and what we do is we enable online retailers and manufacturers to collect and display customer product reviews. So literally our software engine, if you will, is installed in thousands of different online sites. And specifically, what I've done in this situation is pared down the information to specifically the cycling categories in partnership with my company. And basically, we've taken what is now about 3 years worth of customer product review activity and boiled it all down into an easy way to consume the reviews on Velo Reviews.
So let me ask you this: you were talking about the social networking aspect and not having anonymous people jump in and jump on conversations. How do you and your company, how do you keep people from doing the same thing with product reviews? As an example, when Apple first came out with the iTunes App Store, they had a lot of people who were reviewing apps who had never actually used those apps, and then they closed it down to people who were only purchasers of those apps. Makes total sense. How do you handle the same concern when it comes to product reviews?
Yes, so we have a process called Verify Reviewer, and what we do is we pass what we call a token, a bit of data back and forth between the retailer, the manufacturer, and our engine. So essentially, we know in 100% of the cases when the product review is being written by the very same person who purchased that product from the retailer. And so that is really what to underscore about Velo Reviews is about credibility. I wanted to build a site again where I was able to read product reviews and help educate myself. And I wanted to make sure that the people who are actually writing the reviews own the darn products. And you see many, many instances on the internet. And the example with Apple is a perfect illustration, because you just never know what the person's motivation is who's writing that review if they don't own the product. And many times they don't. And you get manufacturers who are blasting each other, or you have, you know, what we would call a fanboy, which is very, very apropos to Apple. But, it, you know, it exists obviously in cycling. There are specialized fanboys, there are Trek fanboys, and they don't seem to want to get along. And so we've really wanted to eliminate that to create this credible and friendly environment to determine what are the very best products for you.
So tell me a little bit about the people who have been the early adopters of Velo Reviews. You know, when I go on right now and I see the number of members, I mean, you're right. For a new website, you're doing well. Who have been the people who have wanted to get on the site right away, and where do you hope that it goes from here?
Yeah, we've had an interesting variety, and it's exactly, to tell you the truth, what we were expecting, which is a number of hardcore enthusiasts, but really, I would say about a quarter of the registered members to date actually work in the industry. So they either work for manufacturers or put on pro cycling events, or like yourself, we have a few folks from the media, and it's really been interesting to watch the dialogue. And again, that's really what I hope to do with Velo Reviews is to open up that conversation between especially manufacturers and end users. Manufacturers are absolutely somewhat perplexed on how to harness social media. I deal with these companies on a daily basis, and sometimes they're frightened because they come from the old school of wanting to control the conversation. And so Velo Reviews is really neat to actually see manufacturers asking our users what they think about their products. And again, that's something super unique. So you'll see an example, a mutual friend that I know that you and I have, Martha, who owns Action Wipes. One of the things that we're doing with Velo Reviews is utilizing our own users to write reviews about the product. And so what we do is we get together with companies like Action Wipes, get samples from them, ask people to sign up to write product reviews, and then provide them samples of the product for free. They can then go use those products and then come back to the site, good or bad, and talk frankly about how they utilized the product and how it worked for them. And we literally have these promotions, these member review parties, if you will, slotted out actually for about 9 months worth of reviews. Every other week we'll be doing this. So another unique reason for people to sign up for Velo Reviews is to become a reviewer themselves.
Wow, great idea. You know, it's funny, as you're talking and I'm thinking about the way that you started Velo Reviews and the reason, you know, you really started it because this was the site that you had hoped somebody else would build. You know, a lot of people ask me about the Fredcast. Why did I start the show? And it's exactly that. When I started listening to podcasts, I went looking for a show like the Fredcast, and there wasn't one. And so I created it, and it's a bit like why you did Velo Reviews. So I really respect that. And what's interesting is that with the Fredcast, I have the pleasure of getting to interact with the listeners. Velo Reviews sort of takes it to the next level in that the listeners, the viewers, get to interact with each other. And so that's a really neat reason for people to want to get into Velo Reviews, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it can be about so many different subjects, whether it's, you know, what's your favorite road ride? You know, we have a partnership with Map My Rides. You can talk about, you know, we went to Downeyville, California, if any of your listeners are familiar, which is kind of like this mountain biking downhill mecca. They have a 17-mile course of single track that goes down the Sierra Mountains, and it's somewhat death-defying, and it's hard to get down those trails without bloodying up your shins and such. And it was really neat to go to a pro-am event and, you know, shoot photos and then come back to the site and, you know, post video. We posted videos, we posted photographs, and all of a sudden, you know, we have like 10 people chiming in. Oh, yeah, I've been there, and this was my experience, and now they're adding their photos. And then, you know, we have different enthusiasts from Canada, like, oh, we just did this ride up in Banff this weekend. And before you know it, it's just really interesting to see these micro bursts of different types of conversations just erupt into all this interesting information, photographs, videos, forum postings. And, you know, I'm really excited. I definitely built this site for myself, and I'm hoping that other enthusiasts will agree that this will be a great place to hang out, make new friendships, you know, learn about new products from other companies, look at events and places to go utilize their bikes, and I think it's coming together. And it's coming together actually more rapidly than I even thought it would.
Well, that's great, Jeff. It has been great having you on the Fredcast. I wish you a lot of luck with Velo Reviews. Hopefully you'll come back and give us an update in a couple of months, and we'll see how it's going. In the meantime, go out to veloreviews.com, sign up, join the conversation, get involved in everything that Jeff's just told us about today. And I'm there, so it's a great way we can correspond there as well. Jeff, thanks again for being on the Fredcast.
It was my pleasure. Thank you, David.
And that was Jeff Helfen from VeloReviews.com. There is a link in the show notes. And thank you so much, Jeff, for doing the interview. Hope everybody will go and check it out. And if you do, go ahead and friend me. I'd be happy to accept you as a friend on VeloReviews. And just a great site. And I'm looking forward to a lot of great things from Jeff and from VeloReviews.com. Well, that's going to do it for today's show. A little bit longer than normal. Glad to have you with us, and glad to have Audible with us as a sponsor. Once again, go to audiblepodcast.com/cycling to sign up for your free 2-week trial of the Audible Listener Gold Program. And thank you also for supporting Audible and for supporting the Fredcast through your donations as well. As always, let me give you a couple of ways to stay in touch with what I'm doing here at the Fredcast. Probably the best way to keep up with what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis. Matter of fact, for the last couple of days, my Twitter followers have known that I had a hard drive crash, and that really stinks. So my advice for you today is go back up your computer right away. To follow me on Twitter, go to twitter.com/Fredcast. Happy to have you following me there. Of course, you can send me an email anytime. My email address is thefredcast@gmail.com, or you can call the Fredcast listener hotline at area code 435-258-6FRED. That's 435-258-6373. And our website for show notes and links is www.thefredcast.com. And now, as we do every week here on the Fredcast, it's time to play a little bit of PodSafe cycling music. Our music coming to you from music.mevio.com. And if you did watch that video I inserted into the feed last week, you heard a little bit of music from the Brian Setzer Orchestra. They've got a new album where they're looking at some classical pieces and they're putting them into the Brian Setzer Orchestra style. Very, very cool. If you remember the name Brian Setzer, if that sounds familiar, that's because he was the front man for the Stray Cats back in the 80s. And he's doing some great music with the Brian Setzer Orchestra now. Tonight's music comes to us also from the Brian Setzer Orchestra. It's called One More Night With You, and it's sort of his take on Grieg's In the Hall of the Mountain King. There are links in the show notes to where you can find Brian Setzer's website and links for the song, the album, and the Brian Setzer Orchestra on iTunes. So go ahead and check it out. We'll be back in a couple of days with another show, but between now and then, thank you so much for staying subscribed. Thank you for listening. Thank you for telling your friends. Thank you for writing a positive review on iTunes. But in the meantime, enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.
In a funky bar and one more night with you. I don't need no voodoo charm. Daddy's farm falls along. Ain't no thing can do me harm as long as you are true.
I don't need no mojo hex, bouncing checks, another X. Shuffle up them broken decks, I'm calling you.
I don't need no pinky ring, bottom bing, one more thing. Love the band that loves.